Good afternoon, everybody. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for this Tuesday, February 20th. I'm Alan Chartok on today's program, The Copyright Forum. Joining me in the studio today are Paul Rapp, Polly Law, and Bill Westwood. They're here to answer your questions about protecting your music, your writing, your art, your poetry, if you went to a public college, a private college. Give us a call at 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also, you know, email us at voxpop@wmc.org. Bill, Polly, and Bill, and Paul, Polly, Bill, and all much more coming up on the Vox Pop right after this news. Hello, once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WNC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. On today's show, it's the Copyright Forum. To answer your questions, we have a great panel. Paul Rapp is intellectual property lawyer and writer in the Berkshires. He represents musicians, writers, fine artists, and businesses involved in the creative economy. He lectures widely on intellectual property issues, wrote a column for Metroland. Bill Westwood is the leading medical illustrator in the United States and a professional member and past president of the Association of Medical Illustrators. Polly Law is past president of the Graphic Artists Guild, an organization focused on the rights of artists. She's a designer, illustrator, and an artist whose works are in numerous private collections and is represented by galleries in Rhinebeck, in New York, along with Provincetown in Nantucket, Massachusetts. Paul, Bill, Polly, welcome back to the Vox Pop.
Hey.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, I've got a lot of work to do here, but I did promise Bill Westwood, because he is the country's leading medical illustrator.
And we are honored to share a room with you.
That he could talk to us a little bit about something you brought with him, otherwise known as Show and Share or Tell.
I just wanted to mention, I came across this book recently and purchased it called The Copyright Zone, A Legal Guide for Photographers and Artists in the Digital Age by Edward Greenberg, Esquire, and Jack Resnicki, a photographer. I haven't finished the whole book, but I think that for those of you interested in registering your copyrights, the chapter on registration has screen captures off of the copyright.gov website and step-by-step explanation of how to register your work. I think it's one of the best registration chapters I've seen, so Bill, I would highly recommend it.
Now, Bill, will you give us the name one more time?
Yep. The name of the book is The Copyright Zone by Edward C. Greenberg, Esquire, and Jack Resnicki, R-E-Z-N-I-C-K-I.
Okay. All right. Well, we got somebody on the phone. We got one sucker already. We'll go to Patrick in Worthsboro. Okay, Patrick, you're on. Patrick, go ahead.
Hi. Like a lot of people today, I'm trying to make some money with photography. And I've been aware for quite some time that the Supreme Court has already settled the issue about there not being any expectation of privacy in a public space. But yeah, a lot of photographers, seem to feel very put upon just to, I guess, cross the T's and dot the I's to get model release forms from people in public. Some don't, but some feel it's very important. I'm wondering, am I missing something about the Supreme Court's decision that when you take a photograph, you automatically own the copyright? I'm thinking that if you're in public, that would obviate the need to get a model release form. I'm just curious as to why there seems to be such different thinking amongst photographers.
Okay.
It doesn't have anything to do with copyright. Yeah. I mean, you're going to own the copyright of the photograph, whether or not a release is needed or not. But if you're in a public place and you take a photograph, you don't need to get a release unless you want to use that photograph for advertising or some other similar commercial purpose. In that case, you'll want to get model releases, but otherwise you don't need to, at least in New York State.
So it's a right to privacy issue. It's
right.
Not a copyright issue.
So if you took a picture on the street of one of Donald Trump's alleged girlfriends,
there are so many to choose from.
Right, there are. Could you use that?
I mean, yeah. If you're in a public place, like Patrick said, you have no, as the courts refer to it, no reasonable expectation of privacy because you are in a public place, and so
Don't go outside.
It was a case in New York where an Orthodox rabbi from some sect in Brooklyn was walking down the street, and a guy had his picture and blew it up and had it in an exhibit. And it was part of the rabbi's belief system that photographs were evil. And
sure, you're rubbing my face.
Yeah, and off they went to court, and the court ruled that the photographer's First Amendment right to, display a photograph that he took in a public place trumped the rabbi's religious beliefs.
1-800.
Can I get a clarification?
Yes.
Oh. Am I still on?
Yes.
Yes, but not for long.
I just want to ask one other thing. Back in the 80s, there was an intellectual property dispute involving using the exclusive OR logic function to display inverse video on a screen, making a cursor blink. And some computer companies paid up to this patent squatter. Others didn't. I'm just wondering, how did that finally resolve? What ultimately came of that?
I don't know. I'm not familiar with that.
So, well,
yeah. This is beyond my bailiwick.
Yeah. Homework. Thank you. Okay, 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You want to know something about a perm? If you went to a private college that somebody may have stolen? Okay, that's a good thing to do. Let's go to Dory in Schenectady. Dory, you're on.
Hi, I had a quick question. I'm a knitter and a crocheter. And when you purchase patterns online, oftentimes independent designers will say, by purchasing this pattern, you agree to not sell your product or you're breaking my copyright. However, I find that to be unenforceable. You have nothing to say with what I do with the end product. I can't sell your pattern, but I can sell hats. Is that accurate?
That gets a little dicey because you come into the intersection of folk art, which you cannot copyright. I mean, what you can copyright with a knitting design or a crochet design, in my opinion, is the printout of the design. Unless you're doing something really extraordinary, I don't know how much of a knitting pattern or how much of a crochet pattern is truly registerable.
We had a big argument and discussion about the fact that they said that you're agreeing to a contract, and I came back with that's completely and utterly unenforceable because you aren't notifying anyone of the contract before the purchase.
Well,
you don't get
that
notification until after the purchase.
Oh, really?
And how can you? Yeah. And we had this huge argument, and I said that's completely unenforceable.
Well, Playboy,
I would tend to agree with you. If they gave you those terms and conditions before you clicked buy, you'd be bound to them, and it wouldn't be a matter of copyright law. It would just be a matter of contract. She's saying
contract.
If you buy this pattern, she certainly owns the copyright to the pattern, but the end result, she's not going to have any control over other than by contract. So
Playboy versus Dumas would cover that. You can't attach conditions after the fact.
After the actual sale. Yeah. So I agree with you, Dory.
Thank you. I really appreciate this. I'm going to download the podcast and time it and send it out.
All right. Go get them.
Thanks, Dory. Okay. Here's the question. Where is everybody? The lines are loaded right now.
It's a nice day. They're all outside.
Oh, that's true.
1-800-3. I feel personally rejected. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. This is a good time to call because it is. Again, 1-800-348-2551. Well, it is interesting, Paul. Here you are, the lawyer. Are you finding more or fewer or more people in this age are getting very uptight about their ownership?
It depends. Depends on the medium. Musicians, much less so. Musicians are realizing that
they've thrown in the towel.
when you make a recording, that allows you to go out and tour, which is a total reversal of what it was 30 years ago. Other writers, photographers, tend to be much more because, you know, photographers or medical illustrators live and die by their copyrights, and so they protect them.
And infringements are up. I'm getting calls from people all over the country, other medical illustrators, about infringements almost every month.
Well,
it's you know.
And with the explosion of the internet, they're easier to find. I mean, people would get ripped off 40 years ago, and you'd never know about it. But now you can find out almost instantaneously.
Yeah. And here we go to Craig in Catskill. Craig in Catskill, you're on.
Hey, how you doing? I was just wondering, a likeness, a sculpted likeness of someone, like a bobblehead of someone, to reproduce so that and to sell it, what would be the copyright infringements there?
Well, it would be a parody, I would assume.
Well, it wouldn't be a copyright. It would be privacy again, and this would be an article of commerce. So using someone's likeness without their permission would be an infringement of their right of privacy. Right?
But it also depends on I would assume,
the source material.
And their fame.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, certain people you can't – I mean, if it was a politician – they're in the public.
A politician or somebody that's in the news, say.
Well, let's say it's just for the sake of an example, me.
Okay. Isn't there a bobblehead of you?
There is.
There is. Yeah.
Yeah, but I was going to put it in pinstripes.
That, maybe a president?
I would think
maybe the whole team. You
might be running into problems because I'm sure the team members have licensing agreements for their likenesses.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah, sports organizations are very strict about those kinds of things, and they come down pretty hard on.
But, I mean, in New York, there's a law.
Be more of a politician or, you know, say all the players that are in the news today.
I would steer clear of that. A politician, maybe, because the politician would have to be an awful jerk to actually chase you around, although I can think of some.
I can think of one.
I can think of 52, at least.
Who would. But other than that, I would be very careful using someone's likeness in a commercial way.
Thank you, Craig. Okay, we'll take a short break. We will be right back. Talk to Oliver and Matt and some other people.
Support for WAMC comes from HMT at the Spa Little Theater, presenting the comedy Inspecting Carol by Daniel Sullivan, weekends through February 25th at Saratoga Spa State Park, homemadetheater.org. Coldham and Hartman Architects, serving residential and institutional clients with architecture designed for resilience and renewability, designed for the next 100 years, cndharchitects.com. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York, supplying the greater capital region with custom display solutions, commercial casework, and interactive exhibits for trade shows, special events, and museum exhibitions. EmpireExhibits.com. Interim Healthcare, for 46 years, offering in-home assisted living for individuals, companions, aides, and nurses serving the greater capital region, Columbia and Saratoga counties, and Glens Falls. InterimHealthcare.com. And the Discovery Center, presenting February programs featuring Pine Bush Trivia Nights and exploration into the world of birds each day of winter break. AlbanyPineBush.org.
Now we go to none other than Oliver in Hillsboro. Oliver, you're on.
Hey, everybody. I make collages, and sometimes I use images of musicians that I know I don't own. You know, they're not public domain, et cetera, but they're part of, like, a larger visual piece. Where does that fall? And I have a small follow-up question, too.
What are you doing with these collages after you finish them?
Oh, I look at them. I give them away. I haven't sold any. I haven't tried to sell any, but...
Then you're in the clear.
If I were to.
If you were to, say, try to license the piece as a print or as an image on a tote bag or a T-shirt, you might...
Or in a gallery.
Or in a gallery is different than reproducing it en masse.
Yeah, I think the original you'd be okay with.
Yeah.
It's when you start doing prints
duplications.
Yeah.
Coffee mugs, condoms, et cetera.
Right.
Exactly.
And the follow-up is, I noticed like I use some like Van Goghs as my background, like postcards. I noticed like on the back of the postcards that the Louvre or whoever has like some sort of copyright administration over the piece. And I just kind of flummoxed by that because, I mean, my understanding of copyright law, I mean, I'm not a lawyer, don't play one on TV or anything, but they don't, I mean, they own the Van Gogh, but, you know, that copyright, you know, is with, so quote unquote, I would think would be long since expired. Where does that fall
you're,
in?
You're correct. And the Louvre doesn't want you to know that. And the, yeah. The Louvre wouldn't like you to say that on the radio in Albany. But you know, the Van Gogh is long in the public domain. And yeah. The Louvre does that so they can license high quality images and people will pay them for it. But they don't have a legal leg to stand on.
But what about the the particular context that it's on the postcard? In other words,
No? It's generic on the postcard.
Yeah, and once it's in the public domain, you can't dig it back out by repurposing it somehow. You know, once it's there forever. So
thank you. Okay, now to Matt in New Paltz. Matt in New Paltz. Whoa. Matt in New Paltz ain't there anymore. All right. Now we're going to go to Nancy in Massachusetts. Okay, Nancy in Massachusetts, you're on.
Hi. I'm a teacher, and I do projects in my classroom that I often think when I'm done that I might like to publish it. And I also have a club, an after-school history club. And same thing with that. And I want to know, does the school have any control of the projects I do while I'm in school?
They are your employer.
Yeah.
They are your employer.
What?
And generally, the products of employees are, the rights to the products of employees are owned by the employer.
Work for hire, yeah.
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 Are these projects you do or projects the students do?
Well, it's sort of both. Like I translated a old, you know, 200-year-old diary into English with my students.
Uh-huh.
And it was a very interesting project. Now, you know, the kids are 8. So.
All right.
Although I have to say, they were very intuitive in the translations and led me in the correct directions many times. Anyway, I don't know. I just.
Yeah, well, you have both the school to worry about since. And you have the students to worry about. I mean, an 8-year-old can own a copyright. And if these kids are contributing, then you would want releases probably signed by their parents. That's reasonable. But I think you'd want to talk to the school if you were going to do something commercial with the work.
Yeah, why not talk to the school, see if the school will be willing to partner with you and the kids and do something.
Right. Okay, great.
Thank you.
Good luck.
1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, and now to Lisa in Montgomery. Lisa in Montgomery, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, I write plays, I'm a playwright, and I do send them out, and they do get produced by, you know, smaller theaters, and during that process, I have, you know, the ability to see how they stand on their feet, and often I do rewrites after that. So I haven't yet copyrighted a play of mine yet, and I'm wondering how concerned should I be, being that I do send them out into, you know, out there, and, you know, should I copyright them before I'm totally satisfied with the rewrites that I've done, or should I just copyright them prior?
You should register them now. You can always amend the registration later, but you should do it as soon as you start sending them out.
Yeah, I agree. And it's easy and it's quick and it's, well, it's not easy because...
By the copyright.
Because the copyright office website is horrible, but it is inexpensive. And you'll get the hang of the website, and you can do it all electronically.
And Polly, hold on 1 second. Polly, you're using the word registration as in copyright.
Well, I mean, her works were copyrighted the minute they left her word processor. But registration is a whole different thing. Registration is letting the world know that you own the rights to your works.
And creating a public record
of it. And it gives you legal muscle to protect that copyright.
Okay, yeah. Now, what's the name of the book again?
The Copyright Zone.
Copyright Zone. Lisa, well worth the investment. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye.
Go get them.
Yeah. Okay. And now we're going on to Dennis in Gilderland. Okay, Dennis in Gilderland, you're on.
Hi, Alan. Hi, folks.
Hi.
Here's the question. A school that I taught in Newburgh in the 60s closed in 1969. I'm in the middle of putting an archives together for that school in the city of Newburgh's public library. There's a question, and part of that includes putting up on their website, digitizing the school's yearbooks. And it was a small Catholic private school. The question is, who owns the copyright to those yearbooks?
Is there a copy?
They were published by Taylor, who does a whole bunch of yearbooks in Texas.
I think you just need to look at the information page in the book, and it'll tell you who owns the copyright.
Probably Taylor.
Yeah. I think that's part of it.
The only indication that it has any relationship to Taylor at all is in the back there's a little stamp saying Taylor Publishing.
There isn't a page with
there's nothing in the front, like a CIP. There's nothing like that at all where it has any kind of information.
And there's not a copyright notice. It sounds like it's in the public domain if it was published before 1990.
Bingo.
And so you're free to go.
In the meantime, take another look.
It's in the public domain. If something was published that didn't have a copyright notice on it before 1990, it automatically fell into the public domain. So you're free to digitize.
As long as there's no little circle C somewhere in there.
Well, no, there's not. It's just like it's almost like a rubber stamp in the back. I mean, it's professionally done.
Yep.
Now, one of the former students who was a principal in Fairfield Ward High School in Connecticut, he says when they produced yearbooks, the school was the publisher, and they just hired these companies as printers.
I think that's probably true.
Sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But even so, if there's no copyright notice, like Paul said, if it was printed without a copyright notice, it automatically fell into the public domain in 1969.
Right. And just go make sure that nobody ripped out a page. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Okay.
That was good.
Yeah, that was a good one, right? Okay, let's go to Donna in Hartford, Connecticut. Donna, you're on.
Hello.
Hello, hi. Donna.
Hi, I was calling because I wanted to know about being inspired by things that are already out. So if you think about games that have words per card mm-hmm. or Mad Libs, mm-hmm. and they have just a list of words,
mm-hmm.
can you write something and have that be published, or does that fall under their Creative Commons copyright for the game or the Mad Libs or whatever it is?
Mad Libs, I believe, is trademarked. And
the piece itself.
Yeah. I think you may notice that if you look on a TV show very often, unless it's a product placement, they will have mm-hmm. made mock-ups of products that look similar to like a can of cola or something, but they have a different name. And so just seeing it briefly, you'd see, oh, that's a can of cola. And you may think it's Coke or you may think it's Pepsi, but it's actually not because they'd have to pay to put an actual Coke or Pepsi can in there.
Do you know the game Apples to Apples?
No.
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 So you're talking about filling in the Mad Libs and then publishing the results, basically.
No, because their story would be their copyright.
Yeah.
But if you had a bunch of words that were, you know, a list of, I don't know, if you had five words and they came from the Mad Libs page.
No.
And you did something with those five words, even though it came from Mad Libs, I don't know if you could copyright words.
Are they words in a sentence or just five random
words? No, just a list of words.
You can't copyright a list.
Yeah.
So it sounds to me like you're okay.
But you can't, you shouldn't put inspired by Mad Libs because that's their copyright.
You know, but wait a minute. If it is inspired by Mad Libs, that's a trademark infringement. It was really inspired by really Mad Libs, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting question, by the way. But, I mean, my head hurts right now.
Thank you, Donna. Okay, and here we go now to Tom in one of my favorite places, Hudson. Okay, Tom, you're on.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So a few years back, I released a record through a record label as a musician with my band. And over the past few years, it has added up listens on things like Spotify or Apple iTunes, whatever that stuff is. I'm not familiar with those apps. And I'm wondering, I've heard that our listen rate has kind of gone up fairly quickly recently. And I'm wondering where I could start with redeeming any sort of finances from those plays, because I think I'm entitled legally to some of that income, but I'm not positive.
Well, it's going to depend on your recording contract, which probably will provide for. How long ago was the contract out?
That was in 11, and I think there was some sort of five-year end date.
Oh, really? If it was just a five-year license, then you should get it all back, and you should be getting paid directly from Spotify and from Apple iTunes and all that. I mean, I'm a recording artist myself, and I get statements every month, and I have no idea what the heck they say. You know, I mean, you're Deezer in Belgium, 1 cent. You know, Spotify.
So, Paul, if you were he, what would you do to go get your money?
I would contact. I would contact the label, tell them that the thing is terminated, and you want the songs removed from Spotify, and then get a service like CD Baby or somebody and upload them yourself, with you as the recipient of the royalties.
So the listens that have already accumulated, you're saying I should just let those go and start over?
Well, you should ask the label to get paid for them if the contract is up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Specify so when your contract lapsed.
Yeah. And let the label know that the contract is lapsed, or, you know, or have an attorney look the thing over and tell you what it means.
Okay, Tom. Thank
Great.
You very much.
That helps.
Okay, let's go here to Anna in Oneonta. Anna in Oneonta, you're on.
Hello, this is Anna. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, about a year ago, someone copied and pasted material from my doctoral dissertation and used it to basically do proposals for lecture recitals around the country. Every time I have asked for advice, they have told me to kind of drop it because it's really hard to do anything about it. And I wanted to know what your take was about this.
I think you can certainly get them to stop stealing from you. I mean, that's infringement. If they're taking stuff from your dissertation and using it in a commercial way, I mean, that's gross infringement.
Is this ongoing?
Not right now that I know. I have sent a couple of letters to the places where she has sent this information and used it. And I was able to take that material down from the internet.
Good.
And get a letter from one of the organizations in which this happened. I did not contact this person directly, and I was wondering if that's a good idea or not.
Why not register it? And then if it's infringed again, you have
You contact Paul.
You have some real significant muscle to go after them.
What is the direct organization to contact for that?
Copyright.gov.
Okay.
And the book
thank you very much.
The book I mentioned before, The Copyright Zone, will explain to you how to register.
Okay.
Thank you, Anna. I've never had that problem with my doctoral dissertation. You know,
have you checked
mental health policy making in three American states? Just hasn't happened.
It might be very relevant nowadays.
It might indeed. Let's go to Steve in Massachusetts. Steve in Massachusetts, you're on.
Hello.
Hi. Hello.
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 I'm wondering if you folks have some information about this phenomenon known as copyleft.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm a practitioner.
Aha, good.
I
understand that it's used a lot in the software development, and apparently it's being used somewhat by composers. Do you have any further information about how that's being done, or widely?
Yeah, it's people, you know, knowingly not enforcing the copyright to the full extent that they could. You know, a composer, you know, will put music online and ask people to fool around with it, to tinker with it, to add lyrics or to, you know, rearrange it or something, and then get back to the original composer, and suddenly you've got a collaboration among strangers. And I have a lot of musician clients that do that. And that's a Creative Commons or a copyleft kind of concept. Also, you're talking about open source software
right.
development, which is major driver of software development these days, where they just leave the code out there, you know, wide open and allow mm-hmm. other coders to improve it. So, you know, that's what right. we're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay. So
Google the Creative Commons.
Right. One of the giants of the copyleft movement, John Perry Barlow, just passed away last week, which was
mm-hmm.
a shame.
Mm-hmm.
And he was great. His writings are all over the internet, and you can look him up and get amused by how he writes.
Thank you, Steve. Okay, we're going to take a short break now, and we will be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Windhorse Naturopathic Clinic, Brattleboro, Vermont, offering naturopathic medicine, oxidative medicine, colon hydrotherapy, and acupuncture, specializing in Lyme disease, now accepting new primary care patients, windhorsenaturopathic.com. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and now new American-made frames, where eyewear is an art, visionexceleyecare.com. Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever. agstewardship.org. Saratoga Jewish Community Arts, presenting the film The Ritchie Boys, Sunday, March 25th, 7 p.m. at Temple Sinai, Saratoga Springs. 518-584-8730, option 2 for reservations. And the Poughkeepsie Public Library District, presenting author Adrian Miller, speaking on The White House Kitchen, Wednesday, February 28th, POKLIB.org for more information.
And here we are, ready to go to Daisy in Holyoke. Daisy.
Hi. I have a question. I have a volunteer gig on a local university radio station where I read poetry out loud.
Poetry?
Whenever I read a poem, I give the name of the poet, and then I also give the magazine or book it was published in, and the publisher and the date of publication. So my understanding is, as long as I'm not getting any money for this and I'm attributing it, I'm in the clear. Is that correct?
No.
No.
You're doing a performance of someone's, you know, unless the poem, and you said poem, right?
Yeah.
Okay. According to Alan, that means you went to a private college. Is that? Because if you went to a public college, it'd be poem.
That's right. That's right.
Unless it's in the public domain, someone likely owns the copyright to it, and you're doing a public performance.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
even though I'm not getting paid for it and I'm publicizing,
it doesn't matter.
That doesn't matter. On the other hand, if you're on an internet radio station doing this as a labor of love, idea of a poet getting all porky and coming after you for reading their poem and actually publicizing, you know, their poetry
and their book.
So, and you know, the worst that's going to happen is somebody's going to call and say, don't do that again.
And so you'll just X that person off.
Well, let me take the other side on this one. Not that I know anything, but as usual. But the reason I would take the other side on this is because we know that there are some people who are really nutty out here,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they hear your poem, you know, on that radio station. I've known enough people who call this radio program so that, you know, you never know, right?
You never know.
Well, like Paul said, the worst they could do is tell you to cut it out. in which case you just don't read anything by that author anymore.
What if they tell you you owe them money? What if she tells you you owe me some money?
I would laugh. They're
poems. I'd send them $5.
And I've been doing it for 13 years and nobody's complained.
Well, there you go.
I think you're fine.
Okay, great. Thanks, Daisy.
The other question is, if I copied it on a CD and gave it away, would that also be
then you're potentially in bigger trouble.
Then you're publishing, you know, rather than just performing.
Okay. Hey, Daisy, you've had your time. Thank you very much. Okay, now we're going to Ron in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. Ron, you're on. I'm trying to get to everybody, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ron.
Hello. I have a journal of my father's trip mission on an LST from Norfolk all the way to Pacific Theater, Okinawa. And I gave a copy of it to the LST Museum, and they asked me a couple times to sign over all the rights, and I didn't do that because I didn't know exactly what they were going to do with it.
Right.
I mean, I'm just wondering, should I do something with it to copyright this thing or whatever to protect it in case somebody...
Yes.
This was in Indiana. I don't know, you know, what happened to the copy, but if I find somebody's, you know, making money on it,
I would register the copyright.
Register with the copyright office.
Isn't it too late? Because I would assume it was written in the 40s.
Yeah, but it's never been reproduced. It's never been published. So it's still an unpublished work.
Oh, okay.
So,
I mean, it's probably illegal in the eyes of the Navy or the military. I don't think nobody was supposed to make a logbook of what the ship's movements were. That's occurred to me. I don't want to try to do it. And then I don't think the Navy would come after me, but
stage it's historic. I don't think they would.
Yeah, I would register the copyright just to be sure.
Thank you.
I can do that in the office by way of in Pittsfield here.
www.copyright.gov.
Or you can get the book that
they'll just tell you how to do it at copyright.gov.
The copyright zone.
Okay. Thanks a lot. All right. And now let's see here. We're getting way behind. Let's go to Lydia in Waterville. Hi, Lydia.
Hi. I'm wondering if someone is developing a new app for, let's say, Android, is it a violation of any laws for them to create and use icons or widgets that visually resemble an iconic product that has a patent copyright? For example, an icon that resembles a specific Rolex watch or something like that.
Probably.
Unless the app is for Rolex.
Yeah.
Okay, what if it doesn't say it? It just looks like it. You could assume it was that. Is basically...
It's eye of the beholder.
That's dangerous. Boy,
that's getting close. It's fun though, but I can see why you would want to do that. But you need to be careful. You know, if you're making a commentary on the Rolex company, it's going to depend on what you're copying, how much you copy.
Now, if you've checked with these companies, like if you ask for permission, is that something that people ever do, it's not going to be worth the time or effort to do that?
Yeah, better to ask for forgiveness than to get rejected.
And make sure make sure it isn't a Disney character.
I was going to say, I mean,
no mouse ears on that Rolex.
Yeah, if Rolex is like Disney, though, they would be very aggressive at pursuing that.
I'll tell you what I would do. I would take the shell of a Rolex and paste in the face of some other
Mickey Mouse.
No, not Mickey Mouse, but some other fancy watch. You know, mix it up, make it obviously a high-end watch, but nothing that is directly that someone would look at it and say, "Oh, that's Rolex." They would just say that's a high-end watch.
Just don't use the Rolex logo. You could probably use the outline of a watch because that's not terribly
exceptional.
Or
right.
Well, you could go to
a big gray area.
It sure is.
You're out in the weeds there.
That's why God made lawyers.
Okay.
You could go to the CVS.
Thank you, Eric.
You could go to the CVS and pay $9.99 for a Waltham. Thank you. Thanks a lot. Bye. 1-800-348-2551, although your chances of getting in are not that good. Okay, so now we'll go to David in Chatham. Okay, David in Chatham.
Hi there, and thanks. Could you please explain the meaning of and the usage of the term, and I think I have this right, droit moral. A number of years ago, I was presenting a training program commercially at a bank for which I was paid, and they wanted to insert that clause in the contract.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's the moral rights to the work. It's much more popular in France. It hits many more different types of art and creative endeavors. In the United States, there is a moral rights law that covers works of visual art of a certain stature. In fact, there was a groundbreaking case, just a trial a couple of weeks ago of a bunch of graffiti artists who painted a building in Queens.
With permission of the owner.
With permission of the owner. Then a new owner came, and even though he was warned that he couldn't paint over the building without contacting the artists first, he just whitewashed the building. And the judge banged him for like $7 million.
Yeah. I mean, it was like It sounded absurd to me.
No.
Well, apparently the new landlord was a jerk, and he lied, and he was demeaning on the stage, on the stand to everybody, including the judge.
He was hoist on his own petard.
Yeah, I don't get it, though. You buy a building, some guy's got some stuff up there.
Because the copyright law has a clause in it, Vera, that allows fine art to be protected under moral rights.
Yeah, and under that law, if you contacted the artists and say, you have 45 days to get this art off of here or I'm going to paint it over. Because there is an escape hatch for building owner.
I see.
So would this have been to my advantage to have retained those rights then in this contract?
It depends on the work.
Yeah, and I see moral rights in a lot of contracts that are, you know, basically international contracts that don't even cover visual art. And, you know, I've seen them in recording contracts and music recording contracts, and they're kind of meaningless in this country. But if you were doing visual art, I think you would want to retain that if you could. Because it stops people from altering your art.
Okay, thanks, David. Okay, and we're going to go now.
Oh,
this is a tough one. Bonnie in New Baltimore. No, I'm sorry. Bonnie comes next. Eric in Red Hook. Eric in Red Hook, you've been on for 17 minutes. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. One very brief aside. I believe poems are written by poets, and poems are written by poets.
Very good.
Well, you've certainly cleared up that. Thank you, Eric. Okay, and now we're going... Now we're going to, I said Bonnie, and I'll keep my word. Okay, Bonnie, you're on. You're on, Bonnie.
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, great. My question is, my mother's part of a national women's organization, and they're doing a suffrage trail on Long Island, and I've been working with her to put together small videos to go on YouTube to go on their website for the non-for-profit organization. But I will be spending a few hundred hours working on this, and they do have some grant money. My question to pay me for my work, and you know, I'll be kind of producing these YouTube videos. Is there a way that I can maintain my own copyright, or is it then the organizations, once I give it to them?
It will continue to be yours.
Without contractual.
Unless there's a contract that you've signed that turns over the copyrights to them. So you will retain the copyrights to the films that you make.
Oh, and the content too, and the content, of course.
Thank you, Bonnie. All right, now over to John in Greenfield, Massachusetts. John, you're on. Go ahead.
Hello. Thank you, Alan. Once again, great show. And guest, I've put together a approximately 6.5 hour training video, interactive video, and I do cite some research and quotes from books and what have you, which I will list as you would in a paper as a reference. Uh-huh. But how do I copyright that, or should I, or is that the means to do that?
You would go to copyright.gov and...
Yeah, video, you can copyright the entire presentation. Now, the things you quote, you obviously aren't going to own, but you have the fair right use to...
quote them.
To quote them, you know, in a educational setting or a research setting. But yeah, you can register a audio video work just like anything else.
Were there students there when you filmed this video? Or
no, it's me in front of a camera talking to people like an audience, but there's no audience.
John, okay. I'm sorry to give you the rush, but I'm giving you the rush. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. And now let's go to Seth, who's been holding on for a long time. Seth, you're on.
Hey guys, hey. This is for you, Paul, and the guy, the recording artist who called in before, wondering about Spotify. And so there is a performing rights organization for the digital domain, and it's Sound Exchange. They do what ASCAP and BMI do, but just for Spotify, Pandora, and so forth.
Well, they do it not for the songwriters, but for the recording artists. Yep.
Well, he's both, it sounds like.
Yeah, it does sound like that.
Yeah, I've gotten royalties for everything that I participated in as either a musician, a producer, or the songwriter. And so, you know, pittance, but it's worth it. So sign up there.
Yeah, thanks for pointing that out because, you know, Sound Exchange, my band gets as much money from Sound Exchange as we do from ASCAP. Not that it's very much, but it's the same amount.
Thank you, Seth. Okay, and Bill in Cairo. Bill, we're running out of time, so you got to be quick about it. Go ahead.
Yes, my question is about master ownership. I have a number of songs that are, you know, probably back from the 70s, late 70s, 80s, 90s, and I've got a couple contracts that I'm sitting on, and one of the things in it was as far as the master ownership. And obviously everything I'm doing now, I'm getting releases from all of the artists, but some of the stuff that I'd like to submit was actually paid by our publisher, but they're no longer around, and I was wondering if I could submit those sound recordings and say that I own the masters. I'm confused about that, and I'd like your opinion.
I think it's going to matter. It's going to depend on what the contract says and depends what happened to the various record companies and publishers that you're talking about. I mean, I can't give a blanket answer for that.
Yeah, it says in the contracts that, you know, I'm giving them a warranty that I own the masters.
Okay.
But there's no transfer of copyright.
But I'm not sure where those masters came from. Or you know, originally you said you were on a.
Well, they were originally we recorded them in New York, and we had studio musicians, which the publisher paid for.
Okay, well then I think you own the masters. The publisher's not going to own the masters. You will.
It's 40 years ago. So I mean, it's,
yeah. And you might be able to get them back after 35 years. If you have a record contract, you can go make a claim and get your master rights back.
Well, they were basically demos, but we did get all of our copyrights because we were writers for hire, and we got all the copyrights.
Gotcha.
Back.
Okay, then I think you own the masters on the demos then.
Thanks a lot.
Very good. Thank you.
Bye-bye. We're just about out of time. I want to thank everyone who called in. I want to thank Eric and Cliff and Lisa and Jeff, all of whom are left high and dry, you know, on the phone, teaching you what? Call earlier. Okay. So thanks to Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp for joining us. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Patricia Dalton Fennell, producer, working to bridge the arts and science and service, announcing Patricia Dalton and the jazz colleagues at Reeve Gauche Bistro, Athens, this Saturday. PatriciaDaltonJazz.com and Wild Bird Junction, 308 Delaware Avenue, Delmar, offering wild bird seeds, bird feeders, bird houses, heated bird baths, binoculars, jewelry, nature toys, and games and chimes, where people and nature come together. WildBirdJunction.com and the Windy Hollow Veterinary Clinic, Montague, Massachusetts, conventional and integrative veterinary medicine, including acupuncture, comprehensive pet care, and health services since 1998, WindyHollowVet.com, and interactive media consulting, a team of online market strategists, providing websites, branding, and digital marketing to the Capital Region and beyond since 1996, MediaConsult.com. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today on the Vox Pop. Our engineer is the incomparable Zach Malloy. Thanks to Colleen O'Connell for answering the phones. Our producer's Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Chartok. Now, stay tuned now for a news update.